ahead, just going on, carrying the whole load just to eat that carrot, which you would not get. So the whole load got carried by the donkey from this dobi's house to the washing ghat. And the donkey went there, the dobi took the carrot, kept it in the pocket, took the same stick and bet the donkey, just go come in the evening back. And the donkey thought, Am honge kamyab ek din. I'll get the carrot one day. While going back, at least I'll get the carrot. So the donkey put all the loads of cloth again on the donkey. Dobi put the load of the clothes on the donkey. It was more heavy because the clothes are wet now. So the donkey is supposed to go back. On the way back, again the same thing happened. It was putting one more step, thinking that, okay, this step I'll get the carrot. One more step I'll get this carrot. Donkey could not get the carrot. It came back and the dobi kept the carrot for the next day. So tomorrow I'll become happy. This formula remains with the person throughout his life. Throughout his life. That is why we actually make so many makeshift arrangements. 5-year plan, 10-year plan. And all these plans become failure. That is why we have to inquire, what is the cause of suffering? Now, there are two questions here. One is, how can I become happy? The other question is, why am I suffering? Among these two questions, first one should ask, why am I suffering? Generally, people ask this question, how I can become happy? Like if you go to a doctor, somebody is a patient, he is having some disease, he is not well. As soon as you go to the doctor, the patient will ask the doctor, Oh doctor, I want to be okay. But the doctor will not ask how you can be okay. He will not say how you can be okay. The first question the doctor asks, what made you sick? What is the sickness? What is the cause of the sickness? What is the cause of misery? That is what the doctor is going to ask you or going to find out. That is called diagnosing the disease. So before giving the medicines which makes the person okay, the doctor has to find out what is the misery, what is the cause of the disease, what is the disease actually. In the same way, we are also trying to become happy and trying to find out, okay, let me try out watching this movie which will make me happy. Oh, let me find out, okay, this restaurant, eating in this restaurant will make me happy. Okay, flat here will make me happy. Okay, getting married to this boy or this girl will make me happy. Or going to this kind of picnic will make me happy. We are just trying out so many things. It is like when you are sick, you go to a medical shop and then try out. Okay, give that medicine, let me try out. Okay, give that medicine, let me try out. But first find out what is the disease. Then you can find out what is the proper medicine for you. So the first question we have to ask is, what is the cause of my suffering? First, diagnose the disease. Why am I unhappy? Then the solution can be there. Otherwise, there will be no solution. That is why the scriptures say that being born as a human being, one has to inquire into these two fundamental inquiries. Number one, what is the goal of life? Number two, what is the cause of suffering? In spite of all my endeavor, I am suffering. Why so? So when you inquire, the next question is, I want to inquire, I want to know the answer for these two questions. Where will I get the answers from? Will you get the answers from your newspapers, the magazines? Nowhere. Getting answers means getting the knowledge. So according to the Vedic system, there are three processes of getting knowledge. The first is pratyaksha praman. That means, I want to know only through my senses. The knowledge gained by the senses. This is called pratyaksha praman. Like the modern science, it so much relies on the sensual perception. I believe only when I see it. When I hear, then only I'll believe. When I feel, then only I believe. This is called pratyaksha praman. But the knowledge gained by our senses are definitely going to be defective because there are four fundamental defects in our senses, in our body. Like the senses are imperfect. Imperfect senses. Eyes. The eyes can only see to a particular extent. And it can only see the visible range. The infrared rays and ultraviolet rays cannot be seen by the eyes. The X-rays cannot be seen by the eyes. The ears also cannot hear beyond the range of the 20,000 hertz. There are some dogs. They can hear up to 50,000 hertz. There are some animals which can hear below 20 hertz also. But the human ear can only hear between 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. So the senses being defective intrinsically, any knowledge gained by the senses will be definitely defective. Like modern science, the textbooks which children read in the colleges or in the schools, they are all full of defects. Especially the science is full of defects. Why? Because the scientists, they have postulated some theories based on their sensual perception. You can understand this point. If you have a textbook which was 50 years old, 50 years back there's one textbook. You open the science textbook and you can see there are so many things which now, if you open compare the science textbook for now, they say, oh, they're all wrong. About 25 years back, there's a concept of atom was completely different. After some time, somebody came and told, oh, no, the previous scientist was wrong. I am right. After some time, somebody came, oh, no, he was wrong. I was right. Like in this way, people say, the science is progressing. The very fact the science is progressing means the science is incomplete. If something is complete, why it should progress? Like when we all gave the examinations, they were asked, there was a question, how many planets are there? Name the 9 planets. We all named the 9 planets. Now they say, no, there are only 8 planets. That means all our certificates should be taken back. Isn't it? Now, recently I asked the child that how many planets are there? You know what the child replied? Actually, there are 8 planets. In the examinations, we should write 9 planets. Then told, why? Because it is there in the textbook. After the textbooks are revised, then it will become 8 planets. So, whatever is our sensual perception, the knowledge gained by the senses will be definitely defective. Because the senses are defective. Because of the defective senses, we get defective knowledge. Imperfect senses. To be illusioned. Sometimes you keep a spoon in a glass of water. You find the spoon is bent. Why? It is illusion of your eyes. It's actually not bent. And not only the illusion, tendency to commit mistakes. We do so many mistakes. In spite of you being expert in a particular field, but still you do mistakes. Not only that. There is cheating and being cheated. The propensity to cheat and be cheated. So because of all these things, the knowledge gained by the senses are definitely going to be defective. That is why pratyaksha praman is defective. So if suppose somebody wants to know what is the goal of life and why I'm suffering by some pratyaksha praman or the books written by some scientists or some philosophers, definitely you're going to get defective knowledge. But beyond this pratyaksha praman, there is one more process of getting knowledge that is called anuman praman. Anuman praman means by your intelligence, by speculation. Oh, I see the moon. Oh, it is like a football. So then you think, oh, the moon size is just football. No, you have to put your intelligence and see, that though moon is not just football in size, it is very far away from the earth. It should be much more bigger than the football. So this is called Anumana Pramana. Anumana Pramana means to get knowledge by one's intelligence. But still, Anuman Praman also fails. The process of deriving knowledge by our own mental speculation, by our intelligence, that also fails, because that is also defective, because the input for the Anuman Praman is pratyaksha only. Just for example, you want to see some stars in the sky, but by your naked eyes you cannot see. But if you use a telescope, you can see them. But still, since the eyes are defective, even though you may use a telescope or a microscope, but still the percentage of defect may be reduced, but the defect cannot be eradicated. That is why there is so much of speculative knowledge which is given. There is one theory called the Darwin's theory that is full of speculation. Now, many of the American universities have banned. One of the court orders is, you cannot teach Darwin's theory as a science. Recently, I saw it in the internet. A court order, American court has given an order, because some Christian missionaries, they went to court. And the American court, they gave a judgment that we are given enough time for the pro-Darwin theorists to prove that man came from a monkey. We are given enough time for them. Since that still remains a theory, it has not been proved as a science, it cannot be taught as a science, it can only, taught as a fiction, it can be taught in literature, it can be taught as an art subject, not as a science, because it has not been proved till now. It is long time, more than 100 years has been given to the pro-Darwinists to prove that this theory is right. And their own father of this chair, that is Darwin himself, in Origin of Species, he has used more than 182 uncertainty phrases. In English, there is something called uncertainty phrases, which means that maybe, perhaps, could have been so. Like, for example, you ask a time. What is the time? You say, maybe, 7 o'clock. What does it mean? Perhaps, it could have been 7 o'clock. These are all what? Uncertainty phrases. So Darwin has used so many uncertainty phrases, which makes his own theory very uncertain. He himself was uncertain about what he is speaking. That is called uncertainty phrases. This is called Anumana Pramana. Anumana means mental speculation. Could have been so, would have been so, like that. So, both Anuman and Pratyaksha, they fail. So if somebody wants to get perfect knowledge, one has to take up the third process of getting knowledge. That is called Shabda Praman. Shabda Praman means to get knowledge directly from the Vedic scriptures. This is where Veda comes into picture to get knowledge. All the other process of knowledge, all the other sources of knowledge, they will give only defective information, defective knowledge. They may be partially true, partially untrue, but you don't know where they are true, where they are untrue. Like, for example, you have a person who is your friend or known person. He tells lies sometimes. Sometimes it tells lies, sometimes it tells truth. And you don't know when he's going to tell lie, when he's going to tell the truth. Will you trust him? Even though he may tell truth, you will not trust him, because you don't know whether it is truth or a lie, when he can tell anything. So in the same way, the modern science, the knowledge given by the mundane, on the mundane platform, the material platform, cannot be trusted, because you don't know when they are correct, when they are wrong. Where they are correct, how they are right, how they are wrong. That is why, if somebody wants to know perfect knowledge, get perfect knowledge, one should just directly go to the Veda. That is why these days, even in the olden days, even in villages now, if you say something, they would say, oh, Is it in the Veda or what? Because Vedic scriptures, they are perfect. Why they are perfect? Because they are having the source. They are having a divine source. They are directly emanating from God. The Vedic scriptures, they are compared to the manual for this world. So who knows better about this world than the person who created this world? Suppose you buy one computer. When you buy a computer, along with the computer, how to operate the computer? There's one manual which comes along with that. If you operate the machine or the computer without studying the manual, then what happens? You'll spoil the computer. In the same way, the Vedic scriptures, they are like the manual for this world. If suppose somebody doesn't study the manual that is called the Vedic scriptures and lives his life, he's going to mess up his life. Like a machine is spoiled when it is operated without reading the manual. In the same way, our life will become spoiled or get messed up without reading the Vedic scriptures. Vedic scriptures are perfect truth. There is no question of any mistake in the Vedic scriptures. Till date, there is no one who had even shown a single point in the Vedas which are wrong. Till now, there is nobody who are there to come and prove this point mentioned in the Vedic scriptures, they are false. No proof is there. There are so many people who came and proved so many theories to be wrong in science, but nobody has come and proved that this point in the Veda is wrong. The example given is that of a cow dung. Veda says if you touch stool, you're contaminated. You should take bath. It may make you sick. A lot of bacteria will enter into you. But the same Veda, it says that cow dung can be used to purify the house. It can be used for abhishek. It can be used for curing many diseases. Cow dung is also stool. But later on, the scientists came and researched the cow dung. They took the cow dung and did so much research on it and came out, oh, it's having wonderful antiseptic qualities. But the same Vedas, they have proclaimed that this cow dung is very auspicious 5,000 years back. There were no chemical analysis which is their laboratories were not there at the time, but still the Veda scriptures, the Vedas were accepted as it is. So this shows that whatever is mentioned in the Veda is true. The chemical analysis of the cow dung is not given, but still the statement is given, cow dung is pure. That is why these people say, oh, we want to do research in the Vedas. Actually, there is no research required for the Vedas. You just have to accept them. Because they are absolute truth. The whole cause of our suffering these days is just because we don't accept the solutions given in the Vedas. There are so many even scientific things which are mentioned in the Vedas, like the embryology, like how the child within the womb progresses as the months go by. The first month, how the fetus is there. The second month, how it is there. The whole description is there in Srimad Bhagavatam, which was written 5,000 years back. The same Bhagavatam, which was written 5,000 years back, contains the description of the embryology. How the embryo develops in the mother's womb. And it is exactly matching with the sonographic reports. How is it so? At that time there was no sonography. Where did this knowledge come from? Because this knowledge is directly from him, coming from God. God made this world. So he knows the best about this world and he has completely written everything about this world in the Vedic scriptures. So Veda is absolute truth. Nobody can question, oh, this is wrong in the Vedic scriptures. till date, nobody did it. That is why if somebody wants to attain knowledge, he has to repose faith in the Vedic scriptures. Now we have heard this term Veda, but let us try to have a very brief understanding of what exactly they are. We say Veda, Veda, but have we ever seen some book called Veda? No. Many people wouldn't have seen that. So let us see what exactly these Vedas are. In the whole of the Vedas, there are 1,130 chapters. And among these 1,130 chapters, there are four sections. We know all the Vedas, they are divided into four: Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Atharva Veda and Sama Veda. And all the Vedas put together were 1,130 chapters. And each chapter has got four sections, that is Brahmanas, Aranyakas, Samhitas and Upanishads. That means there are 1,130 Samhitas, 1,130 Brahmanas, 1,130 Aranyakas and 1,130 Upanishads. Among all these, the most important part of the Vedic scriptures, they are the Upanishads, because that is a knowledge aspect of the Veda. Other part of the Vedic scriptures, that is Aranyakas, Brahmanas and Samhitas, they are talking about the ritualistic aspect. They are not considered very important, that is Karma Kanda and Upasana Kanda. The knowledge aspect about what is the goal of life, what is the purpose of life, what is this body all about, what is soul about, what is this mind, what is the connection between body and mind, what is life air, what is prana, everything is nicely described in the Upanishads, and what is the destination of life, that is also mentioned in the Upanishads. That is why Upanishads are the most important part of the Vedic scriptures. And all put together in the Vedas, there are more than 1,000 lakh verses. And if somebody wants to read the Veda, it is impossible. It is next to impossible. One thing is, there are only 6% of the Vedic scriptures left. 94% are gone. They are not seen now. They are all lost. Like there are two big universities, Nalanda and Takshashila. They had such huge libraries, they were set afire. And the fire was burning for 6 months. Just imagine, so many scriptures were burnt. And there are so many incidences that many, many attacks happened. Many, many scriptures were completely destroyed. In spite of all that, 6% is only left. Even if you want to read the Veda, there are only 6% left. Even if somebody wants to even read those 6%, that volume of those 6% of the Vedas are so huge that would fill up the whole Vasant Vihara or so. It's impossible. Even if you want to read them in your life, your one lifetime is not enough for reading them. Even if you really want to try to read it, the Sanskrit there is so complicated. That is Vedic Sanskrit, it's not Prakrit Bhasha. There is something called Prakrit Sanskrit, that is colloquial Sanskrit. That is what is being taught these days. The Vedic Sanskrit is, there is no teacher available now. It is impossible. And Lord Krishna knows this. Especially for the people in the age of Kali, the biggest problem is no time. So if the whole Veda is there, very difficult for them to know what is the goal of life. It becomes practically impractical. The Veda becomes impractical. That is why Lord Krishna came. And then what did he do? He condensed the whole Vedic scriptures. He compressed all the verses and just brought forward to you one book containing just 700 verses. What is that book? Srimad Bhagavad Gita. That is why Sri Pa Shankaracharya says, Sarvopanishito gavo dogda gopal nandana partho vatsaha sudhir bhokta dugdam gitamritam mahat. Partho vatsaha sudhir bhokta dugdam gitamritam mahat. He says, Sarvopanishito gavo, if you compare all the Upanishads to be a cow, All the Upanishads can be compared to a cow, and this Bhagavad Gita can be compared to the milk of the cow, which is the essence. The essence of the most important part of the Veda, the Upanishads, is this Bhagavad Gita. That is why, Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam. Let there be one scripture for this world, that's enough, that is Bhagavad Gita. If somebody reads this Bhagavad Gita, he doesn't have to read any other scripture. Kimanye Shastre Vistarehi. What is the use of any other scripture if you have Bhagavad Gita in your hand? Because that Bhagavad Gita is the essence of all the Vedic scriptures. And Krishna, what did he do? He is acting as a cowherd boy who is milking this cow of the Upanishads and giving the milk of Bhagavad Gita to Partho Vatsaha. Partha, Arjuna, is a Vatsa, is a calf. Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta. Who is the person who actually understands this Bhagavad Gita? Only those who have got purified intelligence. Sudhi. Sudhi means, Dhi means intelligence. Su means Sundar or good or beautiful. Those who have got beautiful intelligence or good intelligence, they can understand this Bhagavad Gita. Not only understand, they can relish this Bhagavad Gita. Sudhir Bhokta. Bhokta means to relish. That is why being taken birth as a human being, the prime business is to inquire. Inquire into higher realms of existence and get knowledge. And the best source of knowledge is the Veda. Since Veda is impractical in this age of Kali, Krishna, just at the beginning of the age of Kali Yuga, he gave this wonderful book for us, that is Bhagavad Gita. If somebody reads this Bhagavad Gita, all the answers for the questions are found in this one book. You need not go anywhere else. This one book is enough. Srila Prabhupada, the founder acharya for the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, this photograph, you find him here. He was asked by a press reporter in London. He was asked, "What is the secret of your success?" Then Srila Prabhupada told, "I spoke Bhagavad Gita as it is. That is the secret of my success." He did not say, "You know, I did that." No, just whatever was there in Bhagavad Gita, whatever Krishna spoke to Arjuna, I just told to people, and that solved their problems. That is why people are coming. So this one book is enough. So for the next 6 days when we meet, including today for the next 5 days, when we meet, we'll be dividing each day into two sessions. First, as usual, we'll do the bhajans, and then we'll have a small talk, and then we'll have question answer session, and then we have one more small talk and the question answer session. So for today, we have finished the first half, or the first session. As I've told, after the first session, there will be question answers. So now is the question answer time. After that, I'll speak for some more time about, no, Bhagavad Gita is there. Now I want to understand how I should understand Bhagavad Gita. What is the process of understanding Bhagavad Gita? How should I learn Bhagavad Gita? That will be spoken in the second half of our session. So any questions or any inquiries, please do ask, with remembering one point. We started off our session with what? To prove ourselves to be a human, one should be inquisitive. Throughout the whole of the 6 days, the most important thing is not what I am going to speak. The most important thing is what you are going to ask. That is the success of this course. I rate the success of any of the Bhagavad Gita courses based on how many and what kind of questions come during this course. Okay? Any questions? There. Oh, the wire is enough. It can go. You have a cordless.
Hare Krishna. You told that we can learn from three processes.
Yeah.
Now the third process is by that
Shabda Praman.
But these Vedic scriptures and this Gita,
yeah,
which we are reading now,
yeah,
it is written by the human beings.
Okay.
Then how can we say that it is faultless? It's pure.
Wonderful. Nice question. I got it. So, this point was intentionally not spoken during the first session. Now, Veda or the Bhagavad Gita is written by human beings only. That is what is your proposition. But no, Bhagavad Gita is not written by human beings, or the Vedas are not written by human beings. One of the names of Vedas are called Apaurusheya. Apaurusha means beyond Purusha, beyond human. They are divine. Till date, nobody has found out the origin of the Vedas. The Vedas are Sanatana. And Bhagavad Gita was spoken directly by Krishna. And it is recorded in Mahabharata. And Mahabharata is written Madhye Mahabharatam. So this Bhagavad Gita is found in the middle of Mahabharata, and it is written by Vyasa, who is Vishala Buddhe. He is having a vast intelligence. He is incarnation of Krishna. That is why his name is Krishna Dvaipaya Vyasa. So Bhagavad Gita is not written by any human being. If it had been written by any human being, it wouldn't last for so many years. One thing. It wouldn't last for so many years. Definitely there were some defects. Tell me which book lasted for 5,000 years. Of course, the real glory of Bhagavad Gita is not that it is 5,000 years old. The real glory is the knowledge present in it. But still, for the argument's sake, there are so many books written, so many novels written, dramas written, but who cares, who bothers? After a few years, maybe a few hundred years, everything is lost. 5,000 years. If you go to any corner of this world till date, even though he may be any belonging to any religion, as soon as you say Bhagavad Gita, he knows that. It's my personal experience. I was working in Merchant Navy. At the time, my ship was in Singapore for bunkering, for putting oil. So, as a fourth engineer, my duty is to make sure that the oil is transfer is proper. So from the port side, there's one Filipino. He is a cow eater, cow meat. He eats cow meat. You know, he just spoke to me and told, are you a Pakistani or Indian? Because they look the same. I told him, I'm from India. And he told, do you know Sanskrit? That was the first question he asked. Then I told, okay, you know, a little bit here and there, a little bit. So then, he told, do you know Bhagavad Gita? That was the question he's asking. He's from Philippines. And he's into all kinds of activities. But what people are expecting out of you is this. It's so famous. They accept it. Till then. Even an atheist. Like, during the December time, we have mass distribution of Bhagavad Gita. You must have seen during December in railway stations and different places, we put stalls and then the road is they sell Bhagavad Gita's. I was in one of the stalls. So then one person came to the stall and said, hey, Ispiam Mantan. I don't believe in this. They will just hold it and then they can see. Hey, I'll not touch it. I told, why? Pata nahi kya ho jayega. Something will happen. He was an atheist. He's saying that I don't believe, but still he is so much having faith. If I even touch it, there will be change in my life. So,
That is the glory of it. It's not written by any human being.
To ask you about the distinction you make between the gods and humans. In Hindu belief, we also see the divine inside the humans, and the continuum between gods and human beings is so much a part of the Hindu thinking. So this kind of distinction that you're making, I would see that part of the learning that I make is the realization of ourselves as gods is the quest which one is all the time into. So this distinction is something perplexes me.
So maybe because of sound in the pronunciation, you heard I spoke a dog. So I spoke a dog, D-O-G. It has got a particular lifestyle, and a human has a particular lifestyle. There is a distinction. Of course, on the spiritual platform, there is no distinction. That is also soul. But definitely, lifestyle, there is a distinction. So, both there is distinction as well as oneness. Today, I am talking about distinction to bring awareness that a human first should understand that I am not an animal. With that understanding, when he inquires, then he can understand that there is no distinction between the soul in the dog and the soul in me. Whereas a dog cannot do that. If you have a few animals here and then speak Bhagavad Gita, do you think anything will be successful? Sports will be successful? No. So, we are talking today about the distinction aspect. Tomorrow when we talk about the soul, we will talk about the non-distinction aspect also. So, it's a part of the course. So, we are emphasizing today on the distinction aspect. That's it. Okay.
Hare Krishna. My question is, today, like we all have gathered, because somewhere down the line, we all are suffering. And today we speak out about Bhagavad Gita, and we say that Bhagavad Gita is in a way essence of all Vedas. I'm really inquisitive, why were these Vedas written? Were these sufferings 5,000 years back, were they also the same? And somebody in the near past, he saw that, yeah, human beings, they are going to suffer. So we need something that people understand. Or those sufferings existed then also.
In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, this world is Dukkhalaya Ashashvata. Dukkhalaya Ashashvata. This world, at any given point of time, at any given place, in any given circumstance, there will be suffering in some way or the other. The intensity may be more or less. Like the time in the Vedas, they are divided into four phases. Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. So at present we are in Kali Yuga, which only 5,000 years have passed. And previous to Kali was Dwapara Yuga. There's Treta and Satya. The suffering is there in all the four yugas. But the intensity of suffering is the most in Kali Yuga and very evident and immediate. But in the previous ages, the quality of matter was more. So, the experience of suffering was less, but still suffering was there. Like, about 50 years back, could any Indian family in this place, would think of father and mother separated, divorce? It was not much. But now it has become a common factor. It's not a big surprise now. So much of suffering. So as the time is going further and further in Kali Yuga, more suffering. But that doesn't mean 50 years have, there's no suffering. There's some suffering, some kind of suffering like independence or something like that. Something else has wars. And some, so this world is made up of full of suffering. But the way people suffer, the intensity, they vary, that's all. So the Vedas, they are meant to give solution to mankind. In those ages, in Dwapara Yuga and Satya and Treta, in those ages, people had that intelligence to get the solution from directly from the Veda. But in Kali Yuga, we don't have that ability. That is why Krishna, he condensed the Vedic scriptures and gave Bhagavad Gita to you. That is why Bhagavad Gita is Veda and Veda is Bhagavad Gita also. But for now, in this age, for us, Veda doesn't have any practical application. It is the Bhagavad Gita which is the representation of the whole Vedic scriptures for us in this age. That is to be understood.
Hare Krishna Guruji. My question is very simple. We spoke about the Pratyaksha Pramana and Anuman Parman. We speak about them being imperfect. And then we speak about the third source of knowledge being perfect. But my question is that the receiver of the third source of knowledge, for example, me or anyone sitting here, are still receiving that knowledge through our imperfect senses. So how does one safeguard that? Because that imperfection continues till the end of life. And is there a way that you come to know now that you are perfect in terms of your knowledge?
Okay.
So how does one safeguard that? And that's my question.
So your question is, Bhagavad Gita is perfect. So when the Bhagavad Gita is being taught, because people are receiving through the imperfect senses, so their understanding may be imperfect. That is true. It is always, there is a possibility, when somebody tries to understand by his own imperfect senses, then he will have imperfect understanding. But if he tries to understand by the strength of a perfect realized soul, then his understanding can be perfect. Like, you have a science textbook, physics textbook. A child says, hey, why go to college and school? Tuition. I'll just read and pass the examination. That is not authorized. Maybe few children can do it. Few students can do it. But the system is, you have a teacher who has a perfect understanding, a perfect teacher. In turn, that teacher would have got a perfect understanding of the previous teacher. If that person teaches you, you will also get a perfect understanding. That is why, even though Bhagavad Gita is there, one should understand the Bhagavad Gita from a proper guru. That is actually the subject matter for the second session. Since you asked the question, I just mentioned to you in exist. Like, Bhagavad Gita is available, 700 verses are there. You read and you understand in different way. Imperfect way, because you are understanding it in an imperfect way. Because you got imperfect senses. But Srila Prabhupada is a perfect soul. When he teaches to the whole world what is the meaning of this verse, then people will get perfect understanding. As long as the perfect understanding is not reached, till that time, this inquiry goes on, like you are asking this question. So the process of inquiry will go on and on till we reach the perfection in understanding. No. The process of inquiry is the means to achieve the perfect understanding. Because understanding doesn't come just, okay, now I saw a light. No, it doesn't come. Otherwise, you say, 1-6 days, understood Bhagavad Gita, hogi khatam. No. That is why whenever Prabhupada says, he says, process of understanding. One has to at least be in the process of understanding. 10%, 15%, 20%. In this way, the more experiences you get in the process of understanding, intensity increases. In this way, there will be one day there will be perfect understanding. Because you are in the perfect process, you got a perfect teacher. That's it. For the first session, we'll take the last question.
See, irrespective of the caste, creed, and religion, in the courts, they will ask the judge, you see, one clerk will be there and give you the evidence. I will tell you that I will tell the truth only, I will not speak lie and like that. They will touch the Bhagavad Gita.
Yeah, yeah.
But in spite of that, they tell only wrong things and lies, and they are telling.
Yeah.
And another thing is, they are. It is now in the no other religion. They don't give any other book or anything. Only the Bhagavad Gita, irrespective of the all Indians, they put only Bhagavad Gita only. Why? And another question is, in the speedy life, this is rocket. Speedy life. As you said, one should know what we are. One should know that is what I am, how I came to this existence, and to reach the goal and all these things. But in this Kali Yuga and in this speedy life, one wife has to work and husband has to work. In this materialistic life, will it be possible to get a peace of mind? Is there any solution for this? Okay. You see, this, so many things are there. Any solution for this?
Okay. So this course gives you an idea about the solutions. First, let me answer the second question. So that is why we are organizing this course for those people who are all in this life of working, doing business, or housewife, or in responsible positions. Now, the answer to this is, is our life, is our position or life more responsible than that of Arjuna's life? Arjuna had 4 wives. He had a kingdom which is bigger than the whole of India, what you see now. But Krishna chose him to be the first student. And he attained perfection. So the thing that is Bhagavad Gita is only for some renouncements, that is wrong notion. So the solution is definitely there. That faith should be there. And what is that solution? That cannot be just spoken just now. But the solution is there in the Bhagavad Gita. If somebody said it, it will be written there. Now when it comes to the question of taking an oath in Bhagavad Gita, according to the acharyas, the perfect teachers, one should not use transcendental things, spiritual things, for some materialistic purposes. Bhagavad Gita is a completely spiritual thing, spiritual literature. And when you use it for some material things, then the value is lost. When the value is lost, people start speaking lies in the new Bhagavad Gita also. So spiritual things should be respected and used for spiritual purposes, not for material purposes. Like, the deity in the temple, God, is completely spiritual. So when people go to the temple and then use God for some material purposes, oh God, you know, make my business flourish. I put so much of money in the stock. Tomorrow my stock should raise. Next day, he says, the stocks reduce. He says, what is the use of this God? So, one should not actually use this system is not a proper system. From the spiritual point of view, Acharya's point of view, no Acharya recommends this. No Acharya recommends this. Taking Rotan Bhagavad Gita and all these things. It's not to be. Okay, we'll continue with our second session for today's class. So, now, Bhagavad Gita has to be read. Bhagavad Gita is a source, is the essence of all the various scriptures. Now everybody is enthusiastic. So I won't read Bhagavad Gita, let me go. I will go to the bookshop where so many religious books are sold. Go and ask the person, oh, yes, sir, I want a copy of Bhagavad Gita. Then this person will say, which Bhagavad Gita you want? I say, what is this, which Bhagavad Gita you want? I want the Bhagavad Gita which was spoken by Krishna to Arjuna. No, nah, that is okay, but which one you want? Again say, I want the Gita which was spoken by Krishna to Arjuna. Then he says, that is okay, but there are so many people who have commented on this Bhagavad Gita, but which one you want? Then you are completely confused and you come and ask me, oh, what is this? So many Gitas are there, so many commented, what should I do? The same question was asked by an American lady. So an American lady, she asked Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya for the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. She asked that, they've already got 740 editions of Bhagavad Gita available in the market. 740 editions of Bhagavad Gita English translations available. At that time, then the American lady asked, my dear Prabhupada, why are you writing one more commentary? You're already available, why are you writing one more? She was asking, actually, people are already confused in 742 ways, why are you adding one more confusion? Then Srila Prabhupada told, very boldly to the lady, that though there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita, especially in English, none of those commentaries are actually touching the spirit of Bhagavad Gita. Why? Because Bhagavad Gita, the spirit of Bhagavad Gita is devotion to Krishna. The whole Bhagavad Gita is just centered around Krishna and Arjuna, who is a perfect devotee of Krishna. Now, all the commentators, especially in English, they took the words of Krishna, that is Bhagavad Gita, but neglected Krishna. They wanted Bhagavad Gita, but not Krishna. So the process of understanding Bhagavad Gita is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita itself, like how to take the medicine is mentioned on the bottle of the medicine itself, and there is a label, it is mentioned how to take the medicine. The same way, how to understand Bhagavad Gita is also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. In the fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Saivayam maya tejya yoga prokta puratana bhaktosi mesa kajit rahasyam hiraduttamam. He says, my dear Arjuna, Saivayam maya tejya yoga prokta puratana, the old science, the science of devotional service is very old. My dear Arjuna, I am speaking this to you because you are my devotee and you are my friend. Now Krishna spoke this Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna because Arjuna was his devotee and his friend. It means Bhagavad Gita can only be understood by those people who are devotees of Krishna. Until unless one becomes a devotee of Krishna, nobody can understand Bhagavad Gita. They may be giving eloquent discourses. They may be being awarded with so many prizes, writing so many commentaries and books, but they will not understand Bhagavad Gita because they have not understood Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, trying to understand Bhagavad Gita without Krishna, that was the defect. Like if somebody wants to understand mathematics or physics, mathematics.
he would not go to a Marathi professor. Isn't it? If somebody wants to understand physics, he should go to a physics professor. In the same way, if somebody wants to understand Bhagavad Gita, he should go to a proper teacher of Bhagavad Gita who must have got a proper training from a previous teacher. In this way, the Guru Parampara is there. Or he should be authorized to teach, like a physics teacher should be authorized by some university, should have some degree from any of the universities. In the same way, if somebody wants to understand Bhagavad Gita, he should go to a teacher who is authorized by a university. You may say, which university is teaching Bhagavad Gita these days? Like, the chemistry is taught by Madras University, Bombay University, and so many universities. In the same way, Bhagavad Gita is being taught by four transcendental spiritual universities which are there from the dawn of creation. There are four original universities. These original universities are named after four people. That is Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lakshmiji, and the four Kumaras. Brahma, Rudra, Shri, Kumara. These spiritual universities, they are technically called Sampradaya. Sampradaya means Sampradaya. Sam means absolute truth. Knowledge is absolute truth. Pra means prakrishyarupena, completely. Daya means to give. The process by which, the system by which we can receive complete knowledge, the absolute truth, is called Sampradaya. Like this word Sampradaya is used like just like that. Adi amara Sampradaya. This is our Sampradaya. But actually, what is the meaning of Sampradaya? Sampradaya means the system or the process by which we can understand or get the perfect knowledge of the absolute truth or complete knowledge of the absolute truth. That is called Sampradaya. And there are four Sampradayas headed by these four people. Brahma, Rudra, Shri, and Kumara. An International Society for Krishna Consciousness founded by Sri Prabhupada. It is actually coming under the Brahma Sampradaya. Brahma, he gave knowledge to Narada, his son. Narada gave to Vyasa. Vyasa gave to Madhva. Madhva gave to Narahari. In this way, the line came from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his disciple, and this is Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, and then Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, from his to his disciples, from his disciple to his disciple, from it to everybody else. So that is why the perfect knowledge which Krishna gave to Arjuna, that has been coming from the parampara. The example is given there of a tree, a mango tree. Suppose you throw a stone on a ripened mango, the mango falls down. Can you enjoy the mango? It will become defective. But if somebody is there climbing on top of the tree, he actually cuts the mango and gives it to a person sitting in the lower branch. And that person takes the mango and perfectly gives it to the person sitting in the lower branch. In this way, you receive the mango intact and perfectly. That is why the Guru Parampara comes into picture. Many of the people have this notion that, oh, I have Bhagavad Gita, I don't require a guru. I don't require a teacher. For learning dance, one requires a teacher. For learning music, one requires a teacher. To learn mathematics, you require a teacher. When these things, even to learn karate you require a teacher, even to learn swimming you require a teacher, why not you don't require a teacher for learning Bhagavad Gita? That is why the first and foremost principle of understanding Bhagavad Gita is to approach a proper teacher who belongs to one of these four sampradayas, Brahma, Rudra, Shri and Kumara. He should be authorized. This person should be authorized. The teacher should be authorized by one of these four sampradayas. Then only he is actually fit to be a guru. The first and foremost qualification of spiritual master, of the teacher, is he should be a devotee of Krishna. Then only he can have the perfect understanding of Bhagavad Gita and can deliver the perfect understanding of Bhagavad Gita. Like, any object is pursued by different people in different ways. But there is one perfect way of pursuing the particular object.
To give you an example, there is a temple. Like in the south, we have huge, huge temples, beautiful temples, huge structures. So the beggar, he is looking at the temple and saying, wow, nice, wonderful place. I can make a lot of money here today. So he is also seeing the temple, but according to his own consciousness. A civil engineer comes and sees, oh, this temple. So strong, thousands of years it is there, but still it is intact. I built a building last year, it collapsed. So, a civil engineer is also looking at the temple. An architect, he looks at the temple. He says, oh, nice, wonderful carvings, beautiful designs. What an architecture. A tired traveler. Walking a long distance, he sees the temple. Oh, nice place. Let me go and sleep there. Take rest. Public place. So all these people are actually looking at the same temple. But none of them are actually looking at the temple as a temple. Who actually looks at the temple as a temple? A devotee, when he sees a temple. Though he is looking at the architecture and all these things are there, but still, he directly enters the temple and serves the Lord. So though there are so many people perceiving the temple, it is a devotee who understands what the temple is. It is a devotee who understands what the purpose of the temple is. So in the same way, Bhagavad Gita was also perceived by many people. A politician thought, oh, Bhagavad Gita, best book on politics. You see how nice was Arjuna. He was so innocent. He told, I will not fight. But what a politician, Krishna. He completely brainwashed Arjuna. He used Arjuna for his gain. These days, oh, it's a big demand. Every week or every fortnight, I get a call from some management college. And they say, you address our students on this topic called Bhagavad Gita and management. Management and Bhagavad Gita. Like once I went to a college to deliver a lecture. And then introduction was like this. We are all management students. And it has been recently proven that Bhagavad Gita is the best book on management. And who else can this Swamiji, who is the best person to deliver his lecture on Bhagavad Gita and management? It is true, if you study Bhagavad Gita nicely, you can do management. You can be the best manager. But becoming the manager is not the purpose of Bhagavad Gita.